Hari ho,
sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahana Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 73. The devotee should first concentrate his mind on the Lord's lotus feet, which are adorned with the marks of a thunderbolt, a goad, a banner, and a lotus. The splendor of their beauty, ruby nails, resembles the orbit of the moon and dispels the thick gloom of one's heart. The blessed Lord Shiva becomes all the more blessed by bearing on his head the holy waters of the Ganges, which has its source in the water that washed the Lord's lotus feet. The Lord's feet act like thunderbolts hurled to shatter the mountain of sins stored in the mind of the meditating devotee. One should therefore meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord for a long time. 21.22. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives more details. The devotee meditates as well on the elephant goad to lead the elephant his mind on the right path. He meditates on the lotus on the Lord's foot to ornament the lake of his mind. He meditates on the flag to give the highest kingdom to the mind. He meditates on the barley corn to give the highest fame. He meditates on the umbrella to give relief from the three miseries. He meditates on the chakra to give complete protection. The yogi should fix in his heart the activities of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, who is worshipped by all demigods and is the mother of the supreme person, Brahma.
When we meditate on the Lord, our main goal should be to please Him. Sometimes it seems like we should also desire something from it.
See, when you do an activity, there'll always be a result. So, is the result for Krishna or not? You understand? So, getting results is not the problem. See, that's the difficulty that comes up if we're not careful in how we practice or understand the process, just like the general, you know, concept is attachment is bad. Yes, material attachment. But the principle of attachment's not bad. So devotees sometimes may have an oversight that they don't see that when it's talking about you're giving up these bad qualities, it's a matter of you're giving up the bad, you're keeping the good. The principle is kept, you're just giving up the specific improper application. You know what I'm saying? Just like independence is good if it's properly applied. If it's not properly applied, then it's a problem. So everything's a problem if it's not properly applied. So one has to distinguish between the two. So material attachment, yes, has to be given up, but not all attachment. If we go into that area, then that's where our conditioning of gyan comes in. Right? Because the conditioning of karma is that, okay, then whatever is there is for our enjoyment, so therefore we give up everything to do with that. But then the problem is then we may make the mistake of also not seeing the spiritual side of it. Right? We'll give up the material, but we won't accept the spiritual. Right? Spiritual meaning the devotional. Because getting out of the material and coming to the neutral platform, that is spiritual. But it's not devotional. Right? Does that make sense? Spiritual is the situation. Devotional is the actual intent. Does that make sense? So there's a difference. You know, it's just like to cook. You have to be situated in the kitchen. But what's your intent? So spiritual is, it means you're situated on the transcendental platform, but now what's the intent of being there? Is it, does that make sense? So getting a result is not a problem. Right? If the mind is on the right path, then is that a problem? Right? Because then the right path means you're absorbed in Krishna, you're thinking of Krishna. Right? But at the lotus feet of the Lord on the lake of his mind. In other words, what's the decoration in the devotee's mind? The lotus of the Lord, the lotus feet of the Lord. So the Lord is the beauty. Like you have a lake, then its beauty is the lotuses. Right? The lotuses, the swans. So the lotuses are the Lord, the swans are the devotees. Does that make sense? So the swans are always entangling themselves for fun in the lotuses. They like to stick their neck in there and get it all tangled up. Right? And then they pull it out. Somehow that's what they do for fun. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that. He meditates on the flag to give the highest kingdom to the mind. Because the mind, it has a realm that it functions in. If you're going to think of something, you have to think of it in a realm, in a place. Right? So then the highest realm, then the highest kingdom is going to be the spiritual world. Right? That makes sense? Rather than here or rather than Brahman. So we're giving up the kingdoms of karma and kingdoms of Brahman and then coming to the platform, the kingdoms of the spiritual world. Right? Yeah? He meditates on the barley corn to give the highest fame. So what's the highest fame? To be known as a devotee, to be absorbed in the Lord. It's not that we're the great devotee, but that's the position. At least we're functioning in that capacity.
What would be the connection between barley corn and fame?
Barley corn and fame. The other ones make sense. The barley corn does not make sense.
Not for me.
I see. Because barley is auspicious, it's used in the sacrifice. It appeared along with yajna. When Treta Yuga, when the fire sacrifice appeared, so did barley at the same time, because barley was designed to be used in the sacrifice. Yeah. Right? So if you're always engaged in sacrifice, then that will be the highest fame. You know, that's a greater fame than it's just like there's more about how you say. How much detail do you hear about Yudhishthira Maharaj managing his kingdom? Basically nothing. Right? Hardly means basically you know that he's there, but you don't hear about it. But now, what about the Rajasuya sacrifice? Now that you hear a lot about in all the details. So he's actually more famous for that. He's emperor of the world. So many people are emperor of the world, but how many people have done the Rajasuya sacrifice? Right? I think it's him, and then before that was Harishchandra. You know, which you have to go way back in history for. So then, you know, it's basically two kings are known for doing that. Right? At least in that line. So that's the... Does that make sense? So the sacrifice of the barley. Okay? And if the sacrifice, there's always remnants of the sacrifice. So some with the barley corn means they always had food. Yeah, so it's all around is good. He meditates on the umbrella to give relief from the three miseries, right? Because the three miseries, they always come raining down on one. One least expects them, right? He meditates on the chakra to give complete protection. Okay, so these are all clear, right? So these results aren't bad. They're all in connection with Krishna. So any result connected to Krishna isn't a problem. It's when it's not connected to Krishna that's a problem. So then you either have, I want these benefits and then I'll offer them to the Lord, or they're already offered to the Lord. So either it's Sakam or Nishkam. But in any case, it works because it's in connection to the Lord. Okay. The yogi should fix in his heart the activities of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, who is worshipped by all the demigods and is the mother of the Supreme Person, Brahma. She can always be found massaging the legs and thighs of the transcendental Lord, very carefully serving him in this way. Right? So our approach to the Lord is actually through Lakshmi. So you're meditating upon him, then that situates with transcendentally, but since it's devotion that you want to worship him as, therefore then that aspect has to be there. Also, the other aspect, if Lakshmi is not present, then it's only Vasudeva, the position of Vasudeva. Right? So when Lakshmi is there, then there's activity. Right? So then we're talking about Bhagavan. Right? So that's why it's mentioned he should make sure that he's meditating on Lakshmi. Otherwise, if it's Krishna without Radharani, then does that make sense? Because he can't separate. Even is there, even if she's not present in the pastime, but she's always there in his heart, she's always there in his chest, right? Always in the mind of the devotees, like that. So, therefore, she's always seen together with. But the yogi might meditate on Vishnu without Lakshmi. He won't get as much benefit, right? So he should come to this platform becoming a devotee. So that's the thing, is this presentation means it's for devotees.
Yes.
Right? So the principle will always be used, just we won't use the Astanga Yoga system in the detail of Astanga Yoga. We'll use it in Bhakti Yoga. Next, the yogi should fix his mind in meditation on the personality of Godhead's thighs, the storehouse of all energy. The Lord's thighs are bluish, whitish blue, like the luster of the linseed flower, and appear most graceful when the Lord is carried on the shoulders of Garuda. Right, so all energy is coming from the Lord's thighs. So that's the whole. Right? So energy is there, so energy is then applied in the service of the Lord, so that's coming down from. As a yogi, so when he rides on the shoulders of Garuda, then you can see them very nicely, because otherwise he may be standing or sitting, but when he sits, then the thighs are forward, right? Because he sits with his knees forward. So then you can see them more properly. Right? Also, the yogi should contemplate his rounded hips, which are encircled by a girdle that rests on the exquisite blue silk cloth that extends down to his ankles. Right. So a gentleman wears cloth covers the ankles. Right? That's the general thing. If you're not worried about it, then you don't cover. You don't need to. You can wear whatever length you want. But the general thing is if then social circles, then the dhoti should cover the ankles. Mm-hmm. That's the proper length. So he's a gentleman. He has that. And also you see here is that he has the dhoti, but then he also has the girdle, because the belt piece that finishes off the dhoti, right? It's considered complete like that. So it's a standard aspect, a standard part of the traditional dress. You have the dhoti, you have the belt piece, then you have the chakra, right? Not just dhoti and chakra,
yes.
Right? Because does that make sense? The yogi should then meditate on his moon-like navel in the center of his abdomen. From his navel, which is the foundation of the entire universe, sprang the lotus stem containing all the different planetary systems. The lotus is the residence of Brahma, the first created being. So, that, as we discussed before, is that everything's coming from him. Right, so that the lotus is there, all the jivas are there, all their desires are there, all the planetary systems, everything that's necessary for the creation is primordial position before Brahma's creation is there in the lotus. But this is the secondary. I mean, this is the gross aspect of the primary. Right, the subtle aspect then is there before that. That's just the conceptual of it. Right, but in its subtle form. But now it's like, now the blueprint is there. So then Brahma can read that and then make the universe. Right? Like that. It's still subtle, but it's just the grosser of the subtle. Right? That makes sense. Like, you know, air is subtle, but ether is more subtle. Like that kind of thing. In the same way, the yogi should concentrate his mind on the Lord's nipples, which resemble a pair of most exquisite emeralds, and which appear whitish because of the rays of the milk-white pearl necklaces adorning his chest. Right, so, because the means everything is effulgent. So then it appears that there's that, gives that whitish color because of the pearls that are there. So then you get that lighter emerald color and all that. But otherwise, this is a very dark emerald color, right? Very full, rich. Because if you've seen really good emeralds, they're really dark, right? And really, there's no marks in them at all, like that. So they're very rare, like that. I mean, some ones with marks in them, you get them all. They're very common. But without marks, that's very special. The yogi should then meditate on the chest of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the abode of Goddess Mahalakshmi. The Lord's chest is the source of all transcendental pleasure for the mind and full satisfaction for the eyes. The chest is then where the emotions, everything's situated there. So everything's coming from that point. Right? If everything's coming from the heart, then that's where everything's going to be situated. So how the head, the arms, the legs, everything's moving because of that. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The yogi should then imprint on his mind the neck of the Personality of Godhead, who is adorned by the entire universe. Adored by the entire universe. The neck of the Lord serves to enhance the beauty of the Kustubha gem, which hangs on his chest. Right, so then the neck is holding the Kustubha gem. Mm-hmm. Right, so that's the support. Footnote 38. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, the Kustubha gem is the tattva of Jiva Shakti. It is said in the Vishnu Puran. The Supreme Lord distributes the form of the Kustubha jewel, uncontaminated and pure, as the Atma in the universe. Thus the Kustubha represents the unlimited rays, or jivas. Right? So that's why, you see, there's always the Srivatsa and the Kustubha. So that means he's always with the internal potency and the jivas. Right? And he's basically, and he's never with the external energy. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, so then the jivas are very dear, that's why they're on the heart, right? So on the chest, you see, you have Kustubha, which is the living entities, and you have the internal potency. So these two are very dear to him. So they're always on his chest. Right? The yogi should further meditate on the Lord's four arms, which are the source of all the powers of the demigods, who control the various functions of material nature. Right? Because all of his arms, that's where the potency comes that all the demigods can do their work. Because they have their power. Where do they get it from? They get it from the arms of the Lord. Right, because the kshatriyas are the arms, the devatas are kshatriyas that manage the universe, right? Because they're the administrators of the universe. So it all matches very nicely. Right? Do we see why this is... That means why it mentions you can't meditate just on the whole body? Because we'll just meditate on the whole body, and then what's the point? It's just a form. I mean, it's the Lord's form, but it's just about form. It's not about qualities and pastimes. Right? Because you have the name, then you have form. Right? Then there's qualities and pastimes. So the pastimes are based on these qualities. It engages the form. Right? So if you aren't meditating upon these aspects of the Lord, then one has to be very careful it doesn't fall into the impersonal. Or down to just the Paramatma level. Because then it's Vasudeva without his potencies, without his pastimes, without the devotees. You understand? So that's why then the yogi meditates in this way. So if they're just meditating just to meditate, like you could be meditating on Vishnu, a wall, or a candle, then that will be impersonal. Right? It may be the better of the impersonal, it'll be the easier, the quicker of the impersonal, but it'll still be impersonal. So the whole point of the form of the Lord is, why is that form there? Because it's perfect for his pastimes. The pastimes means his interaction with the devotees. Yes?
We often see pictures of the Lord riding on the back of the river, standing but the restrictions on the use of this seeding.
You can do either. See, if you're just riding through the sky, you generally sit. You know, when you stop and you're addressing the devotees or prayer, then you might be standing. So generally you see it's only when he's just right there where the devotees are, then he's standing. But otherwise he's sitting.
Does he also come with Lakshmi or like he writes also with somebody else?
Generally when he's on Garuda, it's just she's there in the form of Srivats. But if it's Satyabhama, then she comes along for the ride. Otherwise you don't really hear of anybody else writing. But that, there may be some description somewhere, but the ones we've come across, then Satyabhama is the only one that demands to come along. You know, they're going for a fight. She wants to come. Some fun. Okay. Then the yogi should concentrate on the polished ornaments, which were burnished by Mount Mandara as it revolved. And so when he was in Kurma, and the Mandara is moving, so then that polished all of his ornaments. You know, another side benefit, right? The mountain stands up nicely, scratches the Lord's back, polishes his ornaments. You know, it works out good. He should also duly contemplate the Lord's discus, right? Because then you remember the pastimes of how that, and then the Lord supporting the demigods, and the net, you know, so all these things just, that's why each thing you add, then it gets more and more, right? Because if you add Brahma in, then the whole pastime with him, you add Lakshmi and all the pastimes with her. Does that make sense? So all these things are so that one can go from just this simple meditation into thinking of the Lord's pastimes. Right, and the point of the pastimes is not just the activity, but it's the relationship between the Lord and the devotee and the prema that's experienced. Right? Because the activity gets something, and that means the prema. He should also duly contemplate the Lord's discus, the Sudarshan Chakra, which contains 1,000 spokes and a dazzling luster, as well as the conch, which looks like a swan in his lotus-like palm, right? Because it's very nice and white, graceful, nice curves, right? Because the swan's known for its all the curves and all that, so that the conch shell has all these very nice curves. The yogi should meditate upon his club, which is called Kamodaki, and is very dear to him. This club smashes the demons, who are always inimical soldiers, and is smeared with their blood. One should also concentrate on the nice garland on the neck of the Lord, which is always surrounded by bumblebees, with their nice buzzing sound, and one should meditate upon the pearl necklace on the Lord's neck, which is considered to represent the pure living entities who are always engaged in the service, right? So that's what gives that shine to his chest, right? They're these pure living entities who are always in the service. So the kastuba means the sum total of all the jivas. And the pearl necklace then represents those pure jivas who are engaged in devotional service. With that. So that's it. Because you always notice that they talk, when they mention about the jewelry, they generally only mention the pearl necklace. They don't mention other things. They'll mention that he has, but they don't get into specifics. Same with Radharani. They generally only mention the pearl necklace. Right? So. Earrings, that they get. But then that the point is, what's the makara? So it's that element of prajumna. Like, so that's the attractive feature. Is the earrings, you know, then on the face, and they, because we connect the earrings to the ears, but actually their effect is with the face. The earrings they give beauty to the cheeks because they're right there. Right? We just think about the ears, but it's about the cheeks, because we don't somehow know to put the thing together. That's what we're saying, is that the modern, they don't get as much out of anything that they do in the Vedic. So even though you have a society 100% committed to sense gratification, the amount of sense gratification they get is very minimal. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like, you know, if I took some plastic and made it wet, then it will carry electricity. You know, so that's kind of like the Western culture. So when it dries out, then things get tough. Right? Yeah. Okay. The yogi should then meditate on the lotus-like countenance of the Lord, who presents his different forms in this world out of compassion for the anxious devotees. Right, so that's the whole thing. He comes to interact with the devotees. So therefore, this smiling face and all this, this is, he interacts through this. So that's where you express the compassion. Right? His nose is prominent, and his crystal clear cheeks are illuminated by the oscillation of his glittering alligator-shaped earrings. Right? So that's the last point made. Right? So that's the thing. So crystal clear cheeks are very bright, right? So that means it's very nice. If the cheeks are dull, then that means there's something wrong. Health's not good, the mood's not good, something's wrong, right? But if they're bright, then that means everything's nice. So with the Lord, everything's always good. So then his cheeks are bright. So you have these bright cheeks along with these alligator-shaped earrings. So then that works very nice. Does that make sense? So that's why also you just see in the tradition is if one's trying to attract attention, one uses the long earrings. If you're not, then you use the short ones. Because if they're studs, they're just on the ears. Then it's just decorating the ears. But if you use the long ones, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So depending upon your status, then you choose what kind of earrings that you use. Does that make sense? Yeah. 23-29, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, the Lord accepts forms in this world by being filled with compassion for his servants. Or he accepts forms along with his compassion, which will live with him there. Right, so it's either he has the compassion, he manifests that, or the compassion, these forms are non-different. Either way, it doesn't matter how you look at it. They have different aspects that are there. Does that make sense? So it means that in any one situation, you'll get the sambandha, the abhideya, and the prayojana aspects from it. You can see all three. So sometimes Shastra will describe one, and another discussion will describe another, or combination, or... Does that make sense? Or different ways to describe sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. So you hear sambandha in one, and the sambandha in another is different. Right? So the idea is to hear all these and hear how they all go together. O mercy, essence of my Swarup Shakti, along with my many forms, accept that form which you like as your living place. Right. So his mercy, he's just saying that it should accept any form that it likes to function in. Thinking in this way accepts forms. So it's about the devotee. So then the forms that match the mood of the devotees. To, in other words, if you're trying to show compassion to a particular devotee, then you'll show that compassion through the perfect form to express that. So then the compassion, that mercy, then takes that form. So then you can say his form is actually a manifestation of his mercy. Right? Because otherwise, how do you interact if there's no form? Right? And since he has unlimited forms, then which one? Because we see if we just present all of them at once, it doesn't work out so good. Right? It didn't work good for Arjuna, it didn't work good for Mother Yashoda. Right? So, you know, one is good. Right? So that one that the devotee can relate to. Thinking in this way accepts forms. His earrings sway because of the wind created by the chamras waved by two servants at the Lord's sides. Right, so then there's always that breeze and all that, right? So that's the difference, is that the Lord, there's always servants there fanning chamras out of affection. Right? And in the movies and advertisements, they have these big monster fans that are blowing because no one's about to render any service to those people because they're already paying him too much anyway. Right? Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Right. So the swing, so when you say long earrings, it means the one to come down and you can connect them with the cheeks. You understand? Because there's the ones that are just around the ears, and then there's the really long ones. So long ones are for, they create that attractiveness. Right? In some sense, like the demigods, they may wear these long ones like that because they're grihasthas or kshatriyas like this. But you see Brahmins, that the men are wearing, they wear these short ones or just studs. They're just on the ear. They never wear the long ones generally. Sometimes if they're in a really big position, sometimes you see these big Digvijay pundits. They got their turbans on. They have 50 followers that they've defeated. They may have the big earrings because, you know, they think they're the man, right? But otherwise, generally, then you don't. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the... So here is the Lord. He is the man. So therefore, it's always attractive and always very beautiful. Right? Or his earrings sway because of his head shaking caused by clever answers given by his close associates. Right? So then he appreciates what they're saying. So either someone's serving... in this way, you know, in service or in intimacy. Either way, the earrings are swaying, and that increases his beauty, makes it very nice. Does that make sense? Or, here's another one, right? Or he tilts his head to indicate the skillfulness as he relishes the dancing, singing, instrumental music with various rhythms. Right? So then he's appreciating what's happening, that service that's being rendered. So any of these, that. So the whole thing is the interaction with the devotees causes his attractiveness. Does that make sense? That's the principle. Just like Prabhupada says, Krishna on his own is not that attractive, but when he expands his internal potency, then he becomes attractive. Does that make sense? So that whole point, when he's interacting with the devotees, either they're rendering service, that intimacy, or other kinds of, you know, doing different kinds of activities to please the Lord, these are then what makes his earrings move, which then creates that attractiveness. So him being pleased with the devotees, then that manifests greater attraction. And that greater attraction and more service, which makes more attraction in the Lord. So it just keeps going. So that's why the even if nothing else is mentioned, then the earrings will be mentioned. But this is the point. It's not just about earrings. It's about the interaction with the devotees, the reciprocation with the devotees. Yeah? Right? Does that make sense? That's rasa. Not just saying, oh yeah, shark earrings, and then arguing over what kind of shark earrings and what does your shark look like. You know, but here it said alligator, sometimes it says crocodile. So I mean, so which is it? You know? No, because the point is it's all of them. It's a combination between an alligator, a shark, and an elephant. Right? So it's got an elephant nose. But it's a shark, but it's still got, you know, feet in that like a crocodile, and a tail like a crocodile. So that's why you have all these different, or alligator, I guess, because alligators are a little bit more symmetrical. They look better. Crocodiles don't look good. Crocodiles need some serious dental work. Right? They definitely need some braces. But they don't bother because everything gets stuck in their teeth, so it doesn't work out. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why you don't have them in this age. There's certain animals that you just don't have in the Kali Yuga. They're in the other three yugas, but you don't have them in Kali Yuga. So Makaras are one of them. Makaras are one of them, those elephants called, I think, what they're called. Yeah, I can't remember. But the elephants, I mean the lions that have elephant noses, those aren't around either.
And timingilas?
Timingilas, I think, are around. Because they just sit on the bottom of the ocean over there. Like that. It means the timingilas are so big, in the hairs of their body, whales take shelter. Right? You know, like that. You know, so it's... They're big. I guess if they don't move around so much, then people just think that it's just this what do you call it? You know, just dirt on the bottom of the ocean. Right. And I doubt you'd want to go down there with a you know, lower yourself down and then take a stick and start poking and see if you can find one. It might not work out so good. Of course, you could say, yes, he died in the cause of science, but The two eyes dancing with the reflections of the two moving earrings on his cheeks, which are mirrors made of the best jewels, became dancing instructors and made the four makaras on the earrings and the reflections in the eyes who have come to their classroom dance. Right, so then the eyes then become also bright. Because if the earrings are moving, that means the Lord is very happy with that service of the devotees. And so then we see that the earrings also then reflect on the eyes. So that whole aspect of that dancing, that attractiveness, so that aspect of prajumna becomes more. Right? So that, does that make sense? So the, what do you call it? Dear Lalita, that aspect, you know, then becomes more prominent. His nose is raised, right? So that means he doesn't have a problem in yoga. He can cross his eyes and stare at the tip of his nose. Right? Udara means great and generous. Because of its good manners in tasting, the nose gives full self generosity. Right? So the nose all represents generosity also there. So there's all these different symptoms. The big noses means generous. Like that. Doesn't mean who they're generous to. That's another point. Like that. Okay. Good manners in tasting, right? So then that's also that you see if someone's dignified, then that the nose is involved in the expression of the dignity. Right? Somebody says you don't really see someone with a pug nose in being dignified. Right? Does that make sense? Yes? No? The yogi then meditates on the beautiful face of the Lord, which is adorned with curly hair and decorated by lotus-like eyes and dancing eyebrows. A lotus surrounded by swarming bees and a pair of swimming fish would be put to shame by his elegance. Right, so you have the lotuses, the swarming bees, the bump, you know, the eyebrows, and then the fish. Right, because the lotuses means there's the lake, so the lake of his face, the lotuses of his eyes, the dancing of the eyebrows, the bumblebees, and then the makara earrings of the fish. So all that together, that is, you know, how you say? What do you say? Okay, it means the lotus surrounded by swarming bees and a pair of swimming fish would be put to shame by his elegance. So if you had this very nice lake with beautiful lotuses, you can see this fish swimming, then that beauty would be put to shame by the beauty that Krishna is manifesting. Right? Does that make sense? So you can see there's so much in there in the nectar, and this is just what they're telling the yogi to do, right? You know, but you can see where this goes. So then for the devotee, then that goes further and further. Right? Does that make sense? So now we've heard these descriptions before. Yes? No? Yes. Like we've heard them earlier in the Bhagavatam. But now you can see as one can appreciate that element of rasa and exchange between the devotees that is there. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So if that wasn't so much appreciated first and second, now by this point and third, you can start to see a glimmer. So this process continues. Then when you get to 10th, then it actually has some meaning. Right? You know, it has, you know, there's a, you know, a significance to the 10th canto. Does that make sense? So it's not just earrings. It all means something. It's not just the metaphysical, and it means the rasa. You understand? So that's the advantage of either you are attracted to that immediately, and then great, that's perfection. Or you take this metaphysical approach and you analyze all these things, then you can see the fine points. Because generally we think, oh, this metaphysical, it's so technical, why do we need to do this? Because the rasa element is just as technical. So if you can't appreciate the technical aspects in tattva, why would you appreciate them in rasa? It's a principle. If you don't like food, you won't like good food. You understand? If you can appreciate the subtleties in food, you'll appreciate good food even more. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that this whole thing is being able to appreciate qualities, because it's Krishna's qualities that are happening, his compassion, his affection, his reciprocation. So one has to appreciate qualities. So when these qualities are defined and show how they connect to each other, how they unfold, then it's not just mechanics. It is here. It shows us how we become bound, but that means the same thing, appreciating the qualities in the reverse, that will take us to the spiritual world. Does that make sense? So there's significance in all this. It's not just more stories, more details. Right? No. Yeah. The yogi should contemplate with full devotion the compassionate glances frequently cast by the Lord's eyes. Right? So it's not just occasionally, you work really hard, but frequently. Because they're always working to please him, and he's always pleased. For they soothe the most fearful threefold agonies of his devotees. Oh, okay.
Maharaj, what are these threefold agonies?
That means your adhyatmika adhidaisagati bhote. Because that means we're always bothered by these three. Now the mechanics of that then go back to the adhyatmakadi daivagodi bhote, like that means, does that make sense? You know, you have the Lord as the source of the energy, right? The devatas then are the controlling everything. Then the adi bhotik will be the senses, right? Does that make sense? Or you can take it as the demigods are the adi daivik. The adi bhotik are the sense objects, and the adiatmic is the senses themselves, means us. Right? So there's different ways it can be put together. But the point is that's the mechanics of it. But the effect is you're going to be unhappy. Right? Either through the body and mind, through other living entities, or through nature. Or you can probably get all three at once. Right? Does that make sense? You know how you say. The storm comes, it's raining, so the Adi Daiva is at work. You're suffering because of that, the Adi Atmik, and you're too far away to catch the guy that just walked off with your umbrella. You know, so then all three are happening at once. Right? And because of the storm, you can't yell either because they won't hear you, and even if they did, they'll pretend they didn't. Right? Right? So that's the thing. Okay. His glances, accompanied by loving smiles, are full of abundant grace. So they're not gross. Right? Everything's very refined, they're very, very wonderful, very elegant. So it becomes even more attractive. Right? Does that make sense? Because someone is affectionate, but if it's gross, it may means the mood, okay, that's okay, but the whole package is not nice. But here is that everything is nice. Right? The mood is nice, the way it's expressed is nice, the forms he has that take on that are the perfect forms to express it that the devotee will appreciate. Because it's all about reciprocation, therefore you want the perfect form that naturally matches the mood of the devotee. Does that make sense? A yogi should similarly meditate on the most benevolent smile of Lord Sri Hari, a smile which, for all those who bow to him, dries away the ocean of tears caused by intense grief. Because right? If someone smiles, then everything becomes nice. If they're not smiling, less nice. The yogi should also meditate on the Lord's arched eyebrows, which are manifested by his internal potency in order to charm the sex god for the good of the sages. Right, so by meditating on his Ivra, how wonderful and beautiful there, you won't be attracted by Cupid. In this way, then the sages, then they get benefit that they're not disturbed. And then for the devotees who are attracted by the Lord, then they're attracted to him. So in any case, Cupid gets left on the wayside there. You know, he's not, he doesn't feature in this program. Right, so we see is that this meditation includes viewing from many different angles. Right, so the same thing comes up many, many times. Because there's different aspects of it.
Right? The angles means like the yogi's angle and the devotional angle?
Yes, but all these different things, because you have to practice the sadhana, and you have to see, you know, how you're getting out of the material world and these kind of things like that, how you're advancing. But at the same time, what are you trying to get to by this process? Right? So that's there. So the Vedic system is it's seamless. Right? The Western system is categorized in boxes and there's no real connection. I mean, you draw a little arrow, but does the arrow have a name? Right? Any presentation, you have this box, the little arrows going all over the place, everyone says fabulous, very logical, but what's the arrow? Why does this move to that? Why is this connected to that? It doesn't have a name. If it was understood, it would have a name. So in the Vedic, all these different qualities, all these different actions, they all have names. That's why it seems it's confusing. Because, but it's whether it be this or that. Why there's these other things? That's what connects them, right? You have man, you have woman. Okay, nice. But what? So you can say man and arrow woman, or woman arrow man. Okay. Now what do we have? We have a man. We have a woman. Now what? But. In the Vedic, that arrow is called Abhideya. It's the activity. That's what pulls together. Now you have some. Now there's a meaning to male and female. So in the modern, you have these little boxes. They don't really have any meaning because you can't define the arrows. Because otherwise, it's just like this. How many formulas do you need to, let's say, understand the diameter of a circle? One. Okay, what about the area of a circle? What about an area of a triangle? A square? A cube? You understand? And now, does that apply to all circles anywhere? No matter which of the 14 planetary systems? Inside, outside? What about in the next planetary, the next universe? You understand? There's a good chance if Nanda Baba needed to know the area of a circle, he'd use that also. Right? Does that make sense? So, the whole thing is that everybody's coming up with newer and newer formulas on how to make business or society or affection or whatever it is work. That means they don't have the formula. Because there is only one formula. Does that make sense? So that's why they have to come up with newer and newer, because they don't have all the ingredients. They don't know how to look for all the ingredients. You know, it's just like this. Do I have a preparation if I just have all the ingredients? I got all the ingredients. I got them all there. I line them all up. Like I look in the book, you know, like that, what order they come in, I put them in the order. You know, I've even gone so far as in front of each one of them, I put a little bowl and I've taken out the exact amount, you know, like that. Is it there? What if I take all those ingredients, throw them in the pot? No, you have to put them in the pot how it's supposed to be put in the pot. They have meaning, how they go. Like, let's say, I have the frying pan, I put the oil, I put the vegetable, I put the salt. Now, how does the frying go? Goes okay? Oh, okay, yes, okay, we'll put the flame. But, so, is it going to fry well? No, why not? Because we put the salt in before. If I want it to fry, I can't put the salt. Because as soon as I put the salt, the water comes. So it makes a difference how you put it together. No. Hence the eternal discussion. Do you put the you put the roasted suji into the water, or the water into the roasted suji. Right? These are the two schools of, you know, how you say halva, you know, how you say it's making. No? So like that means, in other words, there's a different effect. Like that. Like the Gujaratis, they want their halva to be really, really soft. So they don't put the sugar in the water. They wait until it's gotten soft and actually then put in the sugar. And you get this really super soft like that. It says, so depending on what effect you have, you make it different. It won't be fluffy, but it'll be soft. If you want it fluffy, it's not as soft. Somebody said. So that's the whole thing, is that you have to know these things. That's what makes it alive. That's what makes it real. That's the art. So the art can have many, many manifestations, but there's still only one formula. That's the perfection of the Vedic system, is the one formula does everything. And then, but it applies to all ways that you can apply the art. That's why it's so hard to understand. It's very simple, but it's so sophisticated that it's basically above and beyond our concept of thinking. And people who can catch this are very rare. And generally they're the ones that are in the history books. You know, or at least the guy that was could understand this concept in connection with economics. Right? Like the guy, you know, it means like in history, we have a name for who invented the printing press. But he's not the one who invented it. Means he was the guy who paid for it. Because the guy who invented it didn't have the money to invest, so this other guy invested in it, and he then made it available, so everybody knows it from him. They don't know the guy who actually invented it. So the point is, he knew something. He knew how it worked, the economics worked, so therefore he's known.
Maharaj, to know that thing, we need some qualification.
We need qualification. And how are you going to get the qualification?
This is my question.
Ah! Oh, I see, you want some of it. Okay, it's a very simple method, right? Same formula. It means you can apply this on any sphere from, Maha, what is that? Whatever it is. From prema all the way down to completely gross, disgusting materialism. It's the same thing. What is this formula? Without getting the mercy of the Lord, you can't do, because He is knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Okay? So now, what does that mean? How am I going to get the mercy of the Lord? The easiest way is through devotion. Then the mechanics that I use are secondary, and they run more smoothly, because if you have the mercy, then it kind of goes. Does that make sense? Right, you know, that it works like that. Now, it's just like, let's say, if there's someone you don't like, but they do everything perfect, then it gets by, it's okay. But if you have someone that you really have affection for, even if they do things that aren't so great, it still works. You understand? So, that's the best. So, bhakti is the best. Then the mechanics, which are secondary, then it still works. It works out. Now, if you want to, without the Lord's mercy, get it, then you have to follow, still have to please the Lord, but you're going to please the Lord not through devotion to Him as a person, but devotion to His laws. So therefore, you're going to follow the mechanics of the material endeavor perfectly according to the laws of nature. You follow that, then the Lord being pleased, you get the result. But if you just say, oh, we can do whatever we like, you're not getting anybody's pleasure. Right? How many believe the particular individual can do anything he's like? You understand? It's a popular theory. Millions of people say it. But of an individual saying it, how many believe it, that person can do that? Two people? Three people? You're stretching it now. You know? Basically, it's one, his mom. And that's generally there. And there are cases where even she knows this guy can't do it. You know, a very realistic mom. Right?
You might find more in the laughing house.
That's there. Yes. That's but at any one time, anyone who's paying attention is probably not much. Mm. You know what I'm saying? The whole point is not many people have that. But here is a system that you can have that faith. So someone who's following the formulas, then more people have faith. Right? It's just like this. How many people have faith in the success of a scientist? Right? A lot of people. But let's say we have, how you say, you know, in the performance, but how many people have faith, let's say, in a celebrity? They do at the moment, but do they have faith that they'll always be perfect and always do everything? No, at any moment it goes. Why? Because it's not on science. Right? And the ones that are on science, then they're the ones that are always stable, but they may not be as popular. But they're always stable. So those people who know this guy's good because they know the science. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah. So that's the... Does it make sense? Somebody who just comes up, somehow or another makes it in the entertainment world, then how long they last, you don't know. But if someone was formally trained, then you see they last. You know, there's some kids are in a garage, they somehow or another, there's a single, it's a great hit, but whether there'll be a second, you don't know. But someone with proper formal training and all that, they're still 60, 70 years old, still trying to look like they're 18, and they're still performing. No? Yeah. Like that. But fortunately, now they have enough money they can afford all the plastic surgery. Huh? And they look even more weird. Yes. Yeah. With devotion steeped in love and affection, the yogi should meditate within the core of his heart upon the laughter of Lord Vishnu. The laughter of Vishnu is so captivating that it can be easily meditated upon. It is so attractive. And that laughter is there because we saw before the interaction with the devotee. So we see the effect of that laughter is, you know, the moving of his earrings and things like that.
But Maharaj, we don't have any idea how it is the laughter.
That's why 10th canto is there. That's why all these things are there. It's so that we can read and get some. So we have an idea, it's just that we'll get deeper and deeper understanding of it. So that's why, is that you have those who read the pastimes, you have those who read the philosophy. It's rare to find those who read both. You know, and of course, and then you have those who read neither. Right. There are those who think you shouldn't read neither because you should be doing work. Right? You should be doing service, right? Otherwise you're wasting your time. Right? So this thing of that you're studying both, that's more rare. But that's what's recommended. So technically you understand what's going on, but you also know where you're going. Otherwise, what's the point of so much technique if I don't know where I'm going? Like it's not an uncommon thing. You have someone who is very knows the theory and is so practiced in the theory, but they don't know how to apply it in the art, and so they're not actually good artists. Does that make sense? I've seen it many, many times. It's not an uncommon thing, even in the music world. They'll say someone's a good performer, and they'll say someone's a good teacher. They're different. The teacher knows exactly, he can tell you exactly what you're doing right or wrong. Even if you're the best musician in the world, he can still tell you how to improve. But he himself can't do it. But he can do all the technical point. It means, in other words, what he's telling you, he can do. But he can't bring about the art and the life that's there. And there's those who are fabulous performers, but they can't teach to save the life. They really can't. You know, so it's rare you find someone who can do both. So that's the specialist. Right? like that. So that's the acharyas. They can do it, they can teach it. Right? Because the acharya means both. It's that they're teaching by example. Right? So I think it's, who is that name? Was it? I can't remember, is Lord Chaitanya the Haridas Thakur? The Haridas Thakur is someone else.
Yeah, some people practice,
yes,
but don't teach others.
The others teach but don't necessarily practice so well. So, but was it Haridas Thakur?
Haridas Thakur,
he does both.
The greatest devotee in the world because he does both.
So does that make sense? So that's acharya. So they know and they can do. So this thing, oh, Prabhupada knows, but he doesn't know Kali Yuga, he doesn't know the material world. He's from the spiritual world, what we know from this. We're the local homies here, we know what's happening. Like that. No, it's not like that. Okay? Does that make sense? Yeah. No, it's like the insane person saying to another insane person that the psychiatrist doesn't really know what being crazy means. You know? Yeah. Like that. When the Supreme Lord is laughing, one can see his small teeth, right, so he doesn't have big fangs, which resemble jasmine buds, right? So jasmine buds are very nicely formed, right? Because otherwise we end up with all kinds of funny teeth, right? So, like that. They're very nice, they're very exact, they're very perfectly placed, right? Like that. Rendered rosy by the splendor of his lips, so that means that they're so bright and white that just the his lips then give that reddish tinge. Right? So they're very perfect teeth, they're very white teeth, and like that. So he doesn't need braces. Once devoting his mind to this, the yogi should no longer desire to see anything else. Because if he does it properly, he won't. So that's the whole point. 30-33. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, one should not desire to see anything else in one's heart except Vishnu, who is seen in the heart. One should not desire to know anything else in one's heart, since there is nothing greater than the essence of all goals. Right? Because all goals are leading to another goal. But when they finally get to Krishna, that's the end. Right? So when you have that, right, because we're doing a goal because we're thinking I'll be satisfied. We're never satisfied. When you get to Krishna, who is the ultimate goal, we're satisfied. Because before that, we're not satisfied. Right? That's why we keep doing more and more and keep trying different ways. So we're trying all the variety because to us it hasn't worked. In the spiritual world, they're using all the variety because it does work. Right? In other words, here, there's no taste, so I try something new, get a little taste, then that goes away, then try something new again, and then it goes, that taste goes away. So I keep variety just to get even just a little taste. But in the spiritual world, taste is already there, they use it to increase the taste. So no taste goes away, you just add more and more varieties of taste. Does this make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the specialness, yes.
Well, since the Lord doesn't have things, wants, how much of the description that we're hearing is more about the external aspect of the Lord, but
you look so different, you know, you look so bright. What happened? Well, you know, I saw this girl the other day, and she has such a great spleen. Wow, I mean, it's just, you know, the spleen and then the adrenal ducts. Oh, man, I just can't believe it. Right? Isn't that it? Right? You know, isn't it your affection for all those people in your life? It's all about their internal organs. And, yeah, I really like my wife. She's got great bone marrow, you know. Never seen such bone marrow. Well, I haven't actually seen the bone marrow, but you know, it's like the doctors told me it's great, so I thought this is the woman for me. Hey, you know,
that's a pipe. A pipe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's got the most beautiful windpipe in the world. You know, like that, you know. You know, and then we can compare it. Your windpipe is like an oboe. You know, it's not like this. You know, then the guy's windpipe would have to be bigger, so like a bassoon or something. You know, I mean, unless you wanted to go for other aspects, you know, the mucus and bile and air were so great, or, you know, I mean, it's a, you know, her intestines are folded up in such a wonderful way. Wow. You know, I mean, it's like, I mean, the lady, she's a doctor, you know, and then she's, you know, she's got the x-ray, she's looking at it and goes, man, what a colon. I got to meet this guy, you know. It start a whole new trend in romance and stuff like that. Set up a website, you know. The smiling spleen. We'll find your organ match. Tell us the organs of preference, we'll find you a match. What do you think? Could be a multi-billion dollar business. Hey, don't, you know, don't laugh, you know. Of course, it'd probably be restricted to the goth community or something, you know, the punks, and, you know, like that. But, you know what I'm saying? How everyone has a picture, you know, comes on the desk with this one, they have a picture of their liver or something like that, an x-ray, you know, like that. You know, there are guys going by, you know, the cop, well, great liver. Keeps going. Yeah, and the guy, tell me about it. Okay, yeah, go ahead. So you want to continue this discussion? You know what I'm saying? You say to the guy, wow, that guy looks very fit, you know, does that mean, well, his ligaments seem to be very nicely connected, and the tendons and the fascia seems to be well spread around, and is that how we do about it? Yeah, I'll bet he's got really big the blood vessels to take away all that. What's the acid, you know, when he pumps up the muscles, you know, all that acid that builds up, you know. You know, and then you have, like, in Peru, they could talk about, you know, the guys in the mountains, how good little big lungs they got. You know, they got bigger lungs than anybody else. You have to rethink this one. Okay, we'll move on. Okay. This bewilderment, though tasting bliss, this bewilderment through tasting bliss is the highest samadhi for the devotee. So being absorbed in the Lord, that bewilderment, that is the highest bliss. Because the bewilderment here then is always short-lived. Yes. You know, like that. The bewilderment kind of, well, I mean, yeah, it's actually just the bewilderment shifts, that's all. You had one bewilderment, and then when you get almost hit by a flying plate, then it changes to a different bewilderment. Hmm? No? No. Hmm? Different rasa, yes. It starts going into the secondary rasas here, right? You know. The third anga of ninefold bhakti, consisting of meditation on the sweet form, qualities, and pastimes of the avatars of the Lord, has been described in the present context of Astanga Yoga, to attract the great yogis and drown them in the ocean of bhakti ras. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's been described in relationship to Astanga Yoga, but it's the same principle. As we said, the formulas are one. Right? Yes?
It's described in such detail of rasa to a yogi. Do we know any yogis who attained Krishna like that?
Yes, the
bhakti
yogis.
Because this is the first for previous ages.
Yes, so that there were devotees previously. Wasn't that, you know, only when we came along that we got devotees. What to do, poor universe, you know, all those other yugas, but only in Kali Yuga then they can actually, no. They always had devotees. But generally, when we discuss things, we only look at the externals. What's yoga? Because in this, we describe like this yoga, and then it's, okay, that's nice, but then what about, you know, the asana, what if, no, but all that's just to get here. You know, it's just like you go into the kitchen and you're cooking. Yeah, but what about all the pots and pans? Yeah, we're using them. But you're not using all, I'm using the one necessary. Like that, no, but what, you know, you understand? So we tend to get into the secondary and forget the primary. So they can be. But but as it says, it's described through the context, the present context of Astanga. But the context is the same. We should hear hearing, chanting, and remembering. So the remembering is the same thing. Because all those principles are the same. Whether you were talking about, except for the four arms.
Yes.
Like that. Yes. And the weapons. Everything else would be the same as if you were meditating on Krishna and Vrindavan. So the only difference is basically the four arms and the weapons.
Yes.
But otherwise it looks the same. It means Krishna's in Dwarka and he's sitting there somehow or another and the floor is so nicely clean and polished that he sees his reflection and he gets so overwhelmed. So it's good. Good.
Somehow the samadhi that the Astanga yogi is testing now is not finishing. It's going till prema.
Can. But at least up until bhava, and then they take up service. Point is, if it's bhava, then at some point they take up service.
Yes.
But they could do that service through meditation. So technically, the yogi could do service in the Boma Lila through meditation, come to the platform of prema, and then leave the body and go to the spiritual world. Like that. Or he could just take up the external aspects, the physical, you know, what you can see, the visible aspects of devotion. Right? Like in the Gita, it shows the two yogis, the Bhakti Yoga and the Sangha Yogi, but they both come to the same point where they're chanting the Lord's holy name. They're both doing service. Just the one is quicker. Does that make sense? It's just like, it's very difficult to get up to the stage of bhava, right? Up to the liberated platform. But once there, it would be very quick for the yogi. For the devotee, it's quicker to get up to there. Right? So we see these great personalities through yoga, then see the Lord, the devotion moves very fast. You know, Dhruva Maharaj and like that. So once they get to there, because they're on the liberated platform, so there's no material obstacle. Mm-hmm. Right? So it moves very quickly.
Yes.
But it's very slow and difficult to get there. While the devotional process, the devotional service, then even though it's, you could say, it may seem to stretch out, but it's actually moving at a quicker pace. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Though I was fixed in Brahman and beyond the gunas, my mind became attracted to the pastimes of the Lord. I thus learned his pastimes. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.19. Although I was worshipped by those on the path of monism and initiated into self-realization through the yoga system, I have nonetheless been forcibly turned into a maidservant by some cunning boy who is always joking with the gopis. Bilva Mangal, quoted in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 3.144. These verses show that great yogis like Sukadev and Bilva Mangal drowned in Bhakti Ras by the mercy of great devotees. So that's why it's recommended, because when we appreciate, because the whole point of the meditation is not the meditation to make the mind peaceful. The mind's peace is supposed to be peaceful to do the meditation. You understand? So it's different. You can't say it's the same. Just like if I protect the people to get the tax as my result, or I take tax so I can protect the people as a result, it's not the same. One's a Vaishya, one's a Kshatriya. You understand? Kshatriya, the goal is protecting the people. Vaishya, the goal is making economic profit.
Yes.
So if I am meditating so my mind will be peaceful, then you're different from someone who is making the mind peaceful so he can meditate.
Yes.
So we'll say it's all yoga, and then therefore we get confused. That's why you get confused with Varnashram. You know, the artist sings, and then the Brahmin is singing for the deity, so then technically he's a Shudra. Mm. We can't tell the difference. One is singing because for fame and all that. The other is singing to please the Lord. It's not about fame. Right? The Kshatriya in the evening time sits down and plays music or listens to music. It's a hobby. It's just to take the mind off the stress of the kingdom. You understand? So like that. Yes?
As we often hear these descriptions in the Bhagavatam about the form of the Lord, how the Sangha yogis meditate on the form of the Lord. But I must ask devotees, it's not that I hear the Lord say, oh, I was meditating on Krishna. Do we do that?
No, it's because it's remembering, it's smarana.
Yeah.
Hearing, chanting, remembering.
Yeah.
But the process is the same. You start with the feet and you move up. Generally, you don't hear devotees talking about it because they're not.
Yes.
They're not remembering.
But is it recommended to do it? I mean... In what stage of
the
devotional service is it recommended?
In what stage is it not? Okay. If I say a family member's name of your family, then what do you think of? Is it just a name to you? Is it just a form to you? Like if we say the name of your daughter. Okay. Is she just a form? There's this form that looks like your daughter, and that's all the more it is. This name goes with that form. Is that where it ends?
Well, it starts with a form. And then
yeah, and but I'm saying, then is there anything? What about qualities? Do you think of the qualities? Do you think of the interaction you've had? Okay, so all I do is say name, and you think of pastimes. Okay. You know, what if I say Engelbert Humperdinck? Okay, what do you get? Nothing. It's just a name. Right? But someone in the music industry, it's got the whole package. Right? What about Tiny Tim? What about Jimmy Durante? No? Laurence Olivier? Jerry Lewis. Okay, so now I got something, okay? You understand? So that's the whole thing, is to say, when do we start? It means, what do you mean? It's just natural. If you're hearing the name and hearing about the pastimes and this and that, as we become purified, we start to remember these things, rather than, you know, whether the laundry was hung up or not, or did you close the window, or... You understand? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just afraid that people will think, oh, you're such a sahajiya.
So therefore, you don't talk about it.
Exactly.
The point is, if you remember, then it's there. And it comes up now and again in conversations, nice, but you don't volunteer information. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we say that Bhishmadev also can be in that category of great yogi, having affection for Krishna?
Yes. No, he's good. All the Mahajans are great yogis because they're all bhakti yogis, so they're always absorbed in the Lord. But on different, they have different, you know, relationships, different levels of rasa. Like you see Shukadeva, Goswami, Prahlad Maharaj, they're like in Shantaras.
Yes.
They meditate on the Lord. They remember the Lord like that.
But we have seen that Vishnadevi was meditating on Krishna with four hands.
Yes, because he's a Vaikuntha man.
Yeah. Vaikuntha.
Point is Mahajan, is as long as you're on the other side of Yaraja in a spiritual planet, then that's the qualification.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So they're the authorities, they're where we're going to hear from. So then, and they're also authorities that doesn't mind that people go visit them. Right? If somebody goes and visit Prahlad Maharaj, does it upset the pastimes? What about Bhishma? Sukadev? No. But if it was Radharani, then it may get in the way of the pastimes.
Yes.
Right? So therefore, these are the authorities. They're the ones that take the leading role. It doesn't mean necessarily they're the greatest devotees, because you see Bhishma Dev, in his prayers, in his glorification, he's talking about the gopis in Vrindavan, about the ladies in Mathura. He's, you know, he's talking about all these aspects and how great they're attract. But the point is he's meditating upon his Lord that these pastimes are there. Because there's a non-difference. It's just a matter of which aspect that you take as the central feature that everything else expands from. So technically it doesn't matter. But if you want to taste the sweetest of all of this, then you have to start from Krishna and Braja. Like that. Because otherwise, if you start from Vasudeva and then accept that he's doing these pastimes, then there'll be some sweetness, but it won't be as sweet as if you're starting with Krishna. Because Krishna's the original. Like that. But technically, it's not that actually wrong if you're starting the other way. Right? So you have those in Vaikuntha that just think about it Vaikuntha. You have those in Vaikuntha that think about Dwarka, Mathura, or Vrindavan. But from that context of Vaikuntha. Right? So in the same way as situated in the context of Braj, you can also think of all those other places and pastimes, and it will remind you of Braj. So this idea is, we don't hear these other pastimes. No, it doesn't matter. Because the element of rasa is the same. The principle is the same. It's still Krishna.
So they are pretty much aware of the other part of the spiritual world?
Some are, some aren't. It just depends on their interest, their taste. Right? Yeah. Okay. Verses 34 to 44. The liberated yogi never accepts the bodily concept of life. By following this course, the yogi gradually develops pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. In the course of his progress in devotional service, the hairs of his body stand erect through excessive joy. And he is constantly bathed in a stream of tears occasioned by intense love. Gradually, even the mind, which he used as a means to attract the Lord, as one attracts a fish to a hook, withdraws from material activity.
Right, so here's the explanation of how they can come to that platform of prema. So here we see the symptoms of bhava manifesting. So just by this absorption, but absorption in this way, because if they only absorb on the Lord without going into the parts of his body, it will remain impersonal, and generally they will then either go into mystic cities or go and merge into the Lord. Generally those who go for mystic cities drop out before they get to samadhi. Right? And then getting to samadhi, those who do, if they're only meditating on the complete form, then they'll tend to merge into the Lord. Right? So those who meditate on the individual bodily features and in this way meditate on the Lord and the interaction with the devotees, they'll take up devotional service and they'll become advanced in devotional service. Sure. 34. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on verse 34 in Priti Sandarbha Anucheta 73. The stage when material desires are present only as a reflection is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 3:28-34. In this verse, the words evam harau prati lambha bhava mean, by following the previously described practice of devotional service mixed with yoga, yoga mistra bhakti, one attains love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The signs that this love is present are described in the passage beginning with the word bhaktya. Bhaktya means, or bhaktya. Bhaktya here means the activities of devotional service, which begin with hearing about the Supreme Lord. So that means
for us, when we start hearing about the Lord, because otherwise how does the yogi not be able to do this unless he's heard? So it started here, just that he puts the emphasis on remembering. Right? And that comes after so many stages. Well, for the devotee, then it's you know, the main thing, that hearing and chanting, so hearing and chanting remains as a prominent. While here, then they more are focused on the remembering. But, as it said, any one of the nine processes or combination can make you perfect. Then the verse explains, by tasting the sweetness of the Lord as one meditates on him, one's mind gradually withdraws from material activity. Chittam chanakar viyukte. In this way, by practicing yoga, one becomes fixed in devotional service. Footnote 39. Oh, it goes on the next page also. Wow. I like this. Because they're just so different from ordinary books. Like that. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives an alternative meaning to verse 34. The unfortunate yogi who has developed love for the Lord, full of all sweet qualities, whose heart is somewhat soft because of devotion, whose bodily hairs stand on end in ecstasy, and who is constantly overwhelmed with intense tears of joy, gradually withdraws his hook-like mind from the Lord's form. Right, so you get those that meditate on the Lord, but then they withdraw. Right, because they have some other purpose. Commentary. The foolish yogi who, receiving great mercy and experiencing the sweetness of meditation on the Lord's pastimes, rejects it because he is not fixed in that taste. Right? So technically you could also look at it just in our regular practice, is that something comes, we get a taste for the kirtan or something like that. And technically we could just keep going on that level, but we tend to go back to whatever we were doing before. Right, so it's the same thing, is that here it will be in a greater thing because they're doing one step at a time. And then when they get there, then when they withdraw, then they withdraw. But for us, we're practicing, so we're getting that taste withdrawing, getting that taste withdrawing. So as long as we're serious about the practice, then the taste will be, with time, greater than the withdrawing. Right, so therefore we advance. But the principle is there, so it still applies. So not that, okay, that's for those guys. No, it's still for us. Is the tendency is we have there, but because we don't have the taste. That's why when we get to the stage of ruchi, that taste is there, it's stronger, we tend to not withdraw so much. Because then the next stage is attachment. You don't get attached to things that you're not always connected with. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So, and that then, because of that, then one comes to that ecstatic platform. Now, that yogi coming to that platform through this, because he is fixed in taste, right? Then he gets fixed and comes to the platform, prema. Right? Because we see in the Ashtanga yoga, taste isn't part of it. They only have meditation. They have what they should do. But now, if you want to define the process, now you have to say, now what could you say? This yogi now is in samadhi, he's meditating on the pastimes of the, I mean on these attributes of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord. Where is he situated in the yoga system according to Shraddha to Prema? Right? He's in Nishta. So if he, before coming to Ruchi, then he figures that's enough and withdraws for some other purpose, then he's lost that all that benefit. Right? Does that make sense? So, but now if he comes to that platform of taste, then you'll see he will continue and go all the way through, as Kapila Muni described. So that's the whole point, is that we're bringing these things that are necessary on the advanced platform, we're already discussing them and practicing before that. Because otherwise the yogi only deals with this on the Uttama platform, technically. But if they don't apply the process of devotional service, these nine levels of bhakti, then they're not going to stay there. You know? understand? So we're already practicing that before we get there. You understand? Great mystics and yogis come to the liberated platform. They get liberation, but they don't take up devotional service. Why not? Because they didn't practice it before. That's why the focus is not on getting liberation. It's on developing bhakti, attraction to Krishna. Because if you focus on getting liberation, you get it, now what will you do with it? Because if you don't take up, if you don't apply it in bhakti, then you may fall away. And if you say, no, but of course when I get to there, I'll take up bhakti. But the point is, if you're not taking it up now, why would you take it up then? You will fall back on the processes that brought you to liberation. And what are those processes? Knowledge, detachment. So how those are supportive of bhakti, but they don't generate bhakti. Bhakti generates bhakti. So the only way you'll get bhakti is through practice of bhakti. Does that make sense?
So now, is a yogi, his intent is not bhakti, there is a chance of problem.
Yeah, that means that if his intent's not bhakti, generally he'll always fall away. Because he'll either merge into the Lord or get distracted by mystic powers. But if his intent is bhakti, if he's not understanding this, then he still may fall away.
Yes.
As we'll discuss this about how the yogi...
Because he has no yogic association.
Yes, there's no association and all that. So that's why... that's important.
Okay.
What's the best way to meditate for Krishna when you don't see the picture of the Krishna?
Then you read about him or see the deity, chant Hare Krishna, hear the name.
Well, if I want to go through all the parts of his body.
Kapila Muni just gave it. Kapila Muni just explained it. In Bhagavatam, here, this is what you use. Yeah. That's because it's devotional, that's why it's given.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda.